Now? No. Am I introing?
Should we say, or should we go? No, I'll do it. Hello there.
Hello there.
And welcome to This Is Awful, a podcast. I am Allison. I am a true crime buff.
And I'm Trevor, her co-host.
He gave me a very intentional stare and grin.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about. That's my normal look.
Mm-hmm. So today we are not doing a case.
Oh, you're just getting right to this. You just no news. So we're getting into this.
Yeah. I mean, we can drop our socials if we
would like. We'll leave those for the end.
Okay.
But how about, can I talk about what we're doing?
Yeah.
Okay. So this week we're taking a break from cases because it's 9,000 degrees in our house.
We don't have air conditioning.
Yeah.
We have a portable air conditioning unit, and this heat wave is no joke.
I feel like for the past like 3 weeks, our house has just been constantly 95 degrees.
Yeah, it's warm.
Yeah.
So focusing is just impossible.
Yeah, it's been a struggle this week. So I had stumbled across a while ago a list on Mental Floss of 12 reasons why we love true crime, and I want to talk about it. And that's what we're going to do this week.
Okay, so that's your source.
That's our source. One source, yeah. Okay. 12 Reasons Why We Love True Crime, According to the Experts, by Aaron McCarthy, published originally October 10th but of 2018, but updated April 14th of 2021.
Huh.
Anyway, if you guys haven't ever paid attention to Mental Floss, I'm a weird factoid guy. I love factoids and little trivia.
He's very good at it.
It sticks in my brain crevices like bad lyrics. And so I just love reading stuff that's just weird factoids. And it also might have I might love it because I was introduced to Mental Floss with their magazines. I had no idea they were online, just because a guy I toured with used to get them, and he had a bunch of them that he would just have all the time, and we would like challenge each other with factoids. So if Joel's listening, thanks, Joel. Anyway, so I want to discuss this. You ready to discuss this?
Yes, I'm ready to discuss.
So 12 reasons why we love true crime, according to the experts. Number one, because being obsessed with true crime is normal. That's number one.
I think that's true.
Yeah.
I think that there's people that say that they don't like it, don't realize that they consume it in different ways. Like, just because you aren't watching the, you know, Netflix documentary series on whatever, it doesn't mean that you don't also consume true crime in one way or another.
I think if, with most cases, they kind of stick in your head, you hear about something tragic and terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And the details, for most people, kind of like, they kind of, you hang on to them a little bit because it's so out of the norm. It's so out of the ordinary. And not every case is like that for everyone. But I think for most people, it does kind of stick in your head. And you want to kind of like scratch that itch a little bit and read about it. There's a reason why.
You want to understand why.
Yeah. Crime stories have been like every crime of the century, every, you know, like since the beginning of time. If there was something horrendous done by someone, it turned into bard's tales. It turned into, there's a reason why, like, we hear about the terrible things in history way more than like general good things, because I think it's a human nature thing. It's how we're actually,
it literally is how we are wired, because our brains, we survived by knowing where not to go. Like, don't die there. You know, you were aware of where the pitfalls are and where all the danger is.
Yeah.
And that is how you survive, is that you know, oh, you know, so-and-so went over there and ate that thing, and now they're dead.
Yeah.
So I've got to remember that berry is not the berry to eat, you know?
I think there's also such a strong link to morality tales in that, like telling you certain behavior can be harmful. Granted, that gets turned against people in a lot of ways. Not that that doesn't happen now with intentionally excluded groups, as well as, you know, mental health issues.
Yeah.
Tons of times. And we see it in like things like the Satanic Panic. And now
also
with like the sex trafficking thing, where it gets turned to like people glom onto details that are not at all anything that goes on actually with sex trafficking. and actually do a disservice to it.
It's so damaging. But, you know how I feel about, we have a big problem with OUR, Operation Underground Railroad, which obviously problematic name because they are all white people and don't understand. Yeah, anyways.
Yeah.
But we have, there's many, many layers of that dip. So
yeah.
I won't get all into that right now. But a lot of that is, like, that's why I get so frustrated with them, is they play up the details, the salacious, dramatic details.
That's a big problem with a lot of stuff.
Actually wanting to do the work to help.
Really, I think it's human nature to want that, those extra details and the drama. There's a reason why gory horror films exist. And do stuff. But the problem with a lot of that to me, and where like a healthy desire to read about things crosses over into being dangerous, and what's mentioned here in the article is becoming obsessive about things, or having it like be the only media intake, where you then see everything through that lens, which happens a lot with people that they don't think about it or know it, but all their stuff becomes true crime oriented, or they start believing in weird true crime conspiracies that are actually harmful, such as the stuff with sex trafficking, where people will believe that their car is being marked by a string tied on the door handle or whatever. And that's not how human trafficking works. And by perpetuating those things and spreading them far and wide, it actually harms
and distracts
and actually can fuel human trafficking in ways, and it's not good. But I do think, you know, like just being, like having a healthy interest in these really, really fringe stories, stories that are, they do go against the grain of everything. We're used to people committing crimes that were very understandable for most people. But the second that crime goes beyond what you can understand, I think that that piques everyone's interest at least a little bit. But it's also just trying not to fall into a pit of obsession.
Yeah,
Like excusing glorification hero worship, because that's pretty dangerous.
I will say with the obsession stuff, I use that word very rarely.
Yeah,
because what for one person may feel like an obsession is for another person, like. Autistic people tend to we get our special interests, which is just for everybody else, it's just hobbies, but for us it's special interests because it does tend to be a more prolonged fascination. The hobbies tend to stick around longer and, you know, a little more focused. But I think the intention behind it is really important too, because like the experts in taking apart like criminal psychology and recognizing patterns of behavior and recognizing patterns ever. But a lot of those people probably started out as people who were like, just could not get enough of trying to understand those things of seeing the whys and learning the cases and learning the details. So it is, I think that there just has to be, I think you have to have a level of respect for yourself, of, you know, making sure that you're in a good headspace, but also obviously for both the victims and the families who remain.
Yeah. I think what, to me, when it crosses over into like unhealthy obsession, tends to be when it gets too close to that glorification and excusing the crime kind of a thing. If someone starts, it's one thing to be interested in a case. If you have Ted Bundy merch, that's, you've gone past where it's healthy anymore, because now you are
on over.
Now you are going to the point of, this person did horrible things and I kind of like that they did, and that is not okay. That's where it gets really unhealthy, and you can,
and that's not to say that
to a bad spot.
I am certain that I have participated in the true crime community in some way that has been toxic, without
knowing it,
identifying that for myself, and so I'm not saying that, like, I don't expect everybody to be perfect in their approach all the time, but I think that you, like, if you are not actively trying to be responsible in the way that you consume true crime,
yeah,
then you should not be at all.
Yeah. I think there's definitely, like, I think most people have a way, like, you do things that may be problematic because you didn't know or didn't catch it yourself. But the second it's pointed out, you see those issues.
Well, and I've tried really hard to research, ride to defense
of those problems. Like, someone points out it's problematic and then they, like, double down. And that's where it becomes unhealthy obsession, because you're not able to let go of an aspect of something.
With the new information.
Bring in that new information and adjust your stance, or, like, even just the way you're consuming or the cases you're consuming. Mm-hmm. And instead you jump to, I need to protect this thing. It's mine. And that's not healthy. Yeah. And I think in any group, when there's, like, you know, if it's the same thing you see with people that, like, they become obsessed with a band. And then something bad comes when out about someone. When it becomes
kind of culty. And they, cult of personality.
They can't correct that. Or, you know, like, they get to the point where they can't separate any part of their personality from that thing. If it, someone describes who they are, the only thing they're consuming is this thing. The only way they can see the world is through that lens. The only way they can talk to anyone is through that lens. Becomes very difficult.
Yes.
Yeah. And problematic and dangerous.
I agree with that 100%.
Number two. And this one's the only one where I have an issue with phraseology, I think.
Okay.
Number two is, because evil fascinates us. And you know how I feel about the word evil. Because it's kind of that it's passive third character. Person. Mm-hmm. Like, no one could help it. Evil. And I hate that. I hate when people... There's terrible people out there. There's terrible people that do terrible things. They are people. And they did those things. It's not an embodiment of something else. Yeah,
it should have been, because we're fascinated by people who choose evil.
And I think the problem isn't necessarily because... I think evil's an appropriate word there.
Yeah, because they do evil things.
A word to say terrible things done by a terrible person with no remorse in that. I just have an issue, and probably because of my upbringing and stuff, with the phrase evil... being just anything opposite of good.
I do good too. Being
subjective, which means that there's plenty of people out there that see, I mean, because we grew up Mormon.
Yeah.
And so I knew plenty of people that saw drinking coffee as evil.
Drinking coffee?
Coffee.
I heard coffee. I think you said coffee.
Drinking coffee is evil. And to me, like, that was just such a lazy excuse thing. And I know that there's been a lot of stuff since when we were growing up that stances have changed, and definitely
my gosh,
a lot of things have changed where they'll be like, no, well, it's just it's not the right choice or whatever. They won't say that, but I legitimately had people tell me, like, things that are mundane choices that you may not agree with or your religion doesn't support, but are not harming anybody in any way. And they will describe those or ascribe them to evil and temptations of Satan.
Yeah. So,
and I really, really have a hard time with excusing into this third party thing. And that's the satanic panic, is that kind of a thing where it's like, it becomes a way for people to, I don't know. I just don't like people excusing the stuff, because what it really is it's bad people making bad choices, harming people, and having little to no remorse of that.
Yes.
And there's a lot of psychology and there's a lot of science behind why someone might be in that way. But there's also, like,
it comes down to their choice.
There's a lot of times. They made
that choice.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what they chose.
It's so subjective, because what to some people might be evil, to someone else might be not at all, just because of kind of the lens they're viewing it through. Mm-hmm. And that also becomes a very difficult thing when you're just using a word like evil. But I do agree with the general sentiment where they're essentially saying that true crime cases give us this glimpse into, like, a mindset that we can't
come up on our own.
It's so human fundamental taboo that, like, we can't place ourselves in it, because people just are. The vast majority of people are not wired to where they want to take a human life.
Yeah.
It's just not what we want to do. So it's so difficult that, like, legitimately the military has to use training tactics to break people's brains down to get them to not personalize an enemy so that they will actually fire in their general direction. Because in wars in the past, like in World War II, they found out that most people were not purposely shooting at the enemy. They were shooting just to stop someone from shooting back at them.
Mm-hmm.
But they would intentionally shoot high or low because they don't really want to kill them. They just want it to stop.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a very difficult thing. You have to, you know, it's why in World War I they wanted to use stuff like, you know, chemical warfare. Because once you set off a cloud of sarin gas, it's just going to roll with the breeze.
Yeah.
Your job's done. You're not thinking that you're doing that to a person. You can set it off and you can walk away from it. And I think it's one of those things where for most of us, we can't be. I mean, we say it all the time. You know, people will be like, oh, man, I could have killed them or whatever. But when you're mad, mm-hmm. you know, someone cuts you off, you kind of have that like aggression.
Anger, yeah.
But realistically, most people are not in that mindset. And even when there's a situation like a road rage incident, a lot of people feel really bad remorse when they have done something to endanger a person or hurt someone. Like afterwards, they no longer have those violent impulses, when their hormones and everything have come down and all the chemicals in their brain have reset, they do show remorse. Most people show remorse for a lot of things. It's one of the reasons everyone has anxiety and depression. And, you know, it's a totally normal human thing. And so when you find out about someone that has no remorse, it is fascinating to kind of be like, what the crap?
That's like a key function in like being a person in society.
I just hate when it's ascribed to evil, because evil's subjective and that's dumb. Ready for number three?
Yes.
Number three is because of the 24-hour news cycle. So for people that don't know, 24-hour news wasn't a thing until like the 80s. Like,
I would say even as recently as 9/11.
Well, I mean,
because I don't remember it, I'm thinking BBC, of the ticker tape. Like,
I mean, there was still even some of that. Yeah, thing. There was still some of that in the 90s. Mm-hmm. But CNN was kind of like the channel in the U.S. BBC had quite a bit of news coverage throughout the day. Wasn't quite the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But in the 80s is when it started coming into play of like always needing to fuel new news.
Mm-hmm.
And with that came really highlighting like big cases or like cases that grab a little bit of national attention.
Yeah.
It suddenly became into like came to being a huge thing. And there was in the past, you would have that like when there was a big crime in a large city, you had a ton of newspaper coverage because you have like competing newspapers, they need to get sensationalized on the front of their, like whatever their front page article is. And then also you had papers that were twice dailies. Like you have to sell and a ton of newsprint.
Like far fewer rules about like press access to crime scenes and to like open files and stuff.
So crimes of the century and big passionate crimes always got played up in large markets. But suddenly, through the 80s and early 90s, you had this thing of like everything needed to be a case. It's what led to the Satanic Panic, was just daytime talk shows. Just
playing stuff up.
Because they could. It gets the eyes that they want, you know, sells toilets or whatever on the commercial breaks. And so you had this sudden push for crimes that normally would have just been like whatever small town thing and may not be a huge like draw for people.
Yeah.
Getting like highlighted by this news cycle.
It's frustrating. It's extra frustrating because what happens is one network will pick it up and start playing it up as the big deal.
Yeah.
And then the other networks feed off of that. And then they just like keep playing this back and forth, giving all of this airtime to one person that they were like, this is a marketable person. This person's tragedy is going to make us a lot of money.
Yep.
And so not only is it disrespectful and disgusting to the people who don't get that coverage. Yeah. They don't get talked about. That's like so many of these crimes that should have been covered and tips should have been gotten. Like things that like the community should know these names, they get totally skipped over all in favor of one big name of some college student that was a, you know, cute cheerleader or whatever.
Oh yeah.
And it's, but like I also think people don't think about how disrespectful it is to that person, because their whole life is reduced to like dissecting every teeny little piece of the way that they died.
Yeah.
And then that's it. Like, you're just, your memory is to make other people money.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
One of those reasons why, like, I don't understand people's obsession with the JonBenet Ramsey case, like that obsession that people have, because realistically, if it didn't get the tabloid cover, and like the 24-hour news treatment, that case is not a
standout case to you.
I think that for the most part, had it not gotten all the press and the police were able to investigate it more thoroughly without
different police
or different, because because it changes the pressure of the situation and turns into press conferences instead of like actually paying attention to stuff. And it screws up the way that it's perceived, because it's a tragedy. That's
but
not,
now it's like an event too. It's like it's especially gross in her case, because like it was so hypersexualized. She was a child.
It's one of those things where it turns this case into something where people treat it like it's a murder with competing theories in a way that realistically that shouldn't be her memory of people guessing who killed her. That is terrible. And I don't understand people's obsession, because I think if you were to read that story from a different angle, one, it's sadly way too common to have unsolved mysteries of children that were killed where it's most likely a family member. They're just not sure who is the culprit to the point where they can actually arrest a person. Yeah. That happens shockingly often. And I think for most people, like, that coverage just turned, it's the, because she was hypersexualized, because she competed in pageants, and because it's this upper middle class white girl compared to so many people in excluded demographics, that their cases don't even get like touch the news in so many ways, that it turns it into multiple tragedies and victimizations.
Yeah, you use one victim to victimize another.
Yeah.
Like, it's so sad.
And it ties up resources and coverage and just, oh my gosh.
I will say, I don't understand the way that case is hyped up, but it is a case that digs at me. So I do understand wanting to like, understand. It isn't one that I can dwell on for very long though, because cases with little girls really are rough for me.
I think that it's one of those things where otherwise the case would be interesting in seeing why the investigation failed.
Yeah.
In so many ways.
Oh my God, in like 100 ways.
But instead, so much of it is ends up being like allowing.
It took the focus off of that.
And it really, it bothers me, because you allow the people that victimize someone to be front and center in a whole bunch of press conference coverage, dictate the storyline, and confuse investigators, because you're constantly putting a mic in front of them and letting them change the narrative.
Yep.
And gain public sympathy. And like, it does change investigations like dramatically. There's so many cases where you can see that because it was covered so heavily from like right away, and the investigation turned into like having to control a media circus and allowing family members to constantly like turn things into a narrative that then the investigating team has to like publicly fight back against.
Yeah.
It harms like just so many parts of the investigation and turns it really into like, to me, not an interesting case for the coverage in that way. And ultimately, it doesn't help anything. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Go ahead.
There's a series on Netflix about that.
Yeah.
It's called Trial by Media.
Yeah. They cover a whole bunch of different cases.
Yeah. That one's a good one. Yeah. That one's a good one, because it helps kind of shine a mirror back at, like, again, are we being responsible in the way that we consume and create true crime content?
Yeah. It's interesting, because a lot of our cases that we've talked about are ones that are not as covered in the media spectacle.
Yeah, I try to mix it up so that there's some...
I mean, there's a lot that have been, like, followed by the media. You have a lot of articles to discuss them, but they're not to the point of being, like...
JonBenet Ramsey cases.
Yeah, it's not being on every single tabloid kind of a thing. But that it is one of those things where you definitely see that because the media covers something so heavily that it becomes these very big stories. It's one of the reasons I don't really like the really popular ones that get turned into movie after movie after documentary, and they really like focus more on the killer story and turning it into this whole thing. That's all kind of stems off like the original coverage.
Well, and it's like when, I mean, we've talked about Elisa Lam when it's just us, but it's like that where it's her family has begged people to stop talking, like stop making this into a sensationalized occult kind of a thing. This is just, and for those of you who don't know, Elisa Lam was a student that was visiting the Cecil Hotel in California. And she had bipolar disorder and had not been taking her medications. And it seems like she may have experienced a break. I think she was under a lot of stress. Mm-hmm. And so she was found dead in their water tower at the Cecil Hotel. And there's these really unnerving videos from like the security cameras. And because it's a woman experiencing psychosis, of course it looks jarring and like that you're missing something because you are not living whatever she's living.
Yeah.
And yet it's been sensationalized into this huge, like, it could have been haunted. It could have been the ghosts of the Cecil, that kind of a thing. And I hate that so much.
That one ticks so many boxes for like bad coverage of an event in that the main reason why it first came to like prominence is because of the way that she was found, because guests were complaining about the water and then they found her days and days after she had disappeared. And so that has that gross factor that gets people kind of hooked in the first little bite. And then you have all this security cam footage that people like to, you know, push as either she's being stalked by someone or it's an occult thing. But oftentimes security camera, like, cause CCTVs, in order to save tape, don't fit, like, record everything at a normal frame rate. They do it in smaller slices.
Mm-hmm. So it makes the movement very jumpy.
It makes it jumpy and people play it back at normal speeds. And so it looks more frantic than it should be. Mm-hmm. But her family has just begged so much for like the coverage not to be, it's not a mysterious thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not this paranormal, like.
She was a woman who was in crisis. Did not get her. She needed help. Yeah.
And a lot of people put all this stuff on, like, she could never have ended up in the water cistern herself. But there's plenty of things being like, no, you absolutely can. Yeah. They're like, it's not as big a mystery. Like, while all the details aren't for sure, it's either she was victimized by someone or got herself in a bad situation herself because she was experiencing a mental health crisis. Neither of those things are anything to turn into a huge mystery. It should just say, hey, we need to have better security in public buildings in ways that would prevent someone from being victimized.
And better mental health support.
And we need a lot better mental health support. The
public needs to understand and recognize, like, when somebody is needing mental health support.
Yeah.
Ideally, I don't even want to say we should have police trained in supporting them, because I don't want police even going near them.
I don't want someone that's... We need to
take funding from the police.
Yeah.
And take that job away from them, because that's not what they're meant trained to do.
I want someone with a 4-year degree.
Somebody who is,
I want someone that has worked inside multiple facilities that know how to
help someone. And support.
But, you know, crisis support, I mean, there's a whole bunch of other stuff, but to have a family pleading and begging, and then you end up with like a Netflix series about how haunted the Cecil Hotel is, and like stuff where it's going to keep portraying her and her the situation in such a way that's just like her family is still there and constantly sees this being consumed in that way.
Tragedy
is it's a horrific situation. Number four. You ready for number four?
I'm ready.
I think number four is very good after number three because we can't look away from a train wreck.
Yeah.
And I think that that's so much of why the 24-hour news media plays into it. Why, like, all these other stuff leading up to this point, once our interest is piqued, it is so hard. It's such human nature to want to, like, figure it out.
Yep.
You have to see every little bit about it, even though you hate seeing every little bit about it. Your curiosity is just that engrossing in that situation. It's why no matter how much you try to tell people, like when there's a traffic accident, do not sit there
don't and
become
rubberneck.
Don't become a looky-loo and like hold up everyone else and turn into a more dangerous situation. But everyone has a hard time not trying to figure out which car hit which car. You just have to. Always are going to look over. It's human nature.
It's even like animal nature. Yeah. Because so crows, if a crow dies and, you know, the other crows didn't see what happened, you will often see the others like in a circle around the one that died.
Yeah.
And it's because they think it's because they're looking at why the crow died.
Yeah.
They want to know, what happened here?
Yeah.
And I think that's a little bit the way we're wired too. We want to look at it and go, whoa, what happened there? Like,
we also want the resolution.
Yeah.
Regardless of what the end ends up being. Any we kind of resolution. Which
story.
I think is why like it's really frustrating to me when people put stuff onto like some kind of supernatural or cult explanation. Because
that's too easy of a catch-all and it gives no...
Almost always that's a answers. Simple solution to say, you know, a ghost got him.
Yeah.
That's not... I mean, it's much more complex, but also much more simple than that in most cases. There's often just, you know, there's a real shit person out there that did something shitty.
Yep.
But because we can't name that person, you're going to... Like, it's... People want the resolution still. They have to add something to like at least give them some kind of a finality and explanation to it. But yeah, it's hard. I think it's really one of the biggest things is when you hear about or see something about a terrible tragedy, it's really hard not to want to just get a few more details and kind of fill out.
I will say I've clicked on enough stories because of that same instinct.
Yeah.
And just deeply regretted it. And so now I'm much more cautious, especially because I usually am doing research every week. So I'm like deep delving into these really, really bummer cases. So now I am like, I'm pretty choosy about what I click on these days.
Yeah. Number five, because it makes us feel prepared. And I think
that's a huge one.
I think for women, especially, or people that are excluded a little bit more, where they don't.
They don't maybe have just talking that from safety feeling.
Me as a large white guy living in a low crime state where I'm in the majority, it's easy to feel safe all the time. And I don't have this compulsion to feel like I need to be prepared of every situation and outcome. But I feel like for many other people, that's definitely,
I think that's probably the biggest part of why I'm in like interested. Yeah. I have a very strong sense of like, I want justice for people. Like I've always felt that, probably gotten too carried away with it on many occasions, but I think it's that combined with what you just said that I want to prepare. I want to think through these awful situations. What would I do?
Yeah.
How would I handle this? And nobody really knows what you would do.
I think,
but thinking it through
makes
me feel like I know more about what I would do.
I think that's why there's these abnormal theories. Ones that, like, don't really...
Yeah, like outlandish.
And just don't follow conventional wisdom. Like, if you step back and think about it, mm-hmm. it doesn't. But all the time, people, like, have this stuff like, and that's why you got to look in the back seat of your car, even though
realistically... Nobody looks in their back seat. Well, okay, that's... Yeah. Very few people look, like, check their back seat yeah. every time they get into their vehicle.
And also, there's very few cases... where looking in the yeah, back of your vehicle is somehow going to, like, I mean, what, at best, you found someone that already wants to victimize you, that has a weapon that's in the back seat ready to get you anyway. I guess you're not driving, but at that point, it seems like, you know, it's marginally better.
Here's an emergency preparedness tip for you. If you just have so much tack on your back seat, so just put yeah. like oh, a yeah. saddle, a bunch of helmets, maybe your riding boots. There is no room yeah. for anybody to attack you.
Also, if you just let your kids take over the back seat of yeah. your car, it'll be so disgusting.
Let your children feralize your vehicle.
Nothing will ever crawl back there because they'll just find half-eaten hamburgers from McDonald's and spilled soda. But beyond those tactical advantages, also, there's just not very many cases of that happening. Yeah, it's yes. a terrible place for someone that's, like, actually trying to perpetrate some kind of a crime. Mm-hmm. Because hiding in a backseat's not an it's easy way to get out of that yeah. situation. Like, every time it's shown in a movie, it's like, yeah, but have you tried to, like, you're laying in the backseat of something. Have you tried to, like, get up without making a bunch of noises? You're, like, huffing and puffing, trying to, like, turn yourself around.
No, that's just us. We're broken. Might
just be me. I'm big and fat, so it's probably just me. But I just don't think that it leads to any kind of stealthy advantage other than it's shocking to see someone's face in your rearview mirror when you weren't expecting it yeah. in a movie. But, yeah, it's. I think that that's kind of, like, why you get those, like, tips that show up around stuff, even mm-hmm. when experts say, no, that's not what it is. That's not really going to help you prepare in any way. Just be aware of your surroundings, be safe, stay in lit areas and, you know, neighborhoods, you know, kind of thing.
It is also an internal battle for me of, yes, I'm partially interested in true crime because of that feeling of, well, I know better. Like, yeah. now I... But it's also very dangerous territory because it's very easy to cross over into, oh, they should have done this. They yeah, should have. Yeah. No, they shouldn't. The person that was hurt
they're not to
should
blame.
Never have been in that situation to yeah. begin with. That's not on them. That is on whoever chose to hurt them, which is part yeah. of why I struggle with a lot of like popular catchphrases in the true crime community, because it's not on you. Like, we jokingly say, don't die, literally because that's what Trevor...
That's been my number one rule says, since like, I was 17. He
says bye that way.
Because it was one of those things people would say goodbye to me, mm-hmm. and that feels like, I don't know, it's been weird. I didn't know how to say bye to people, and so my thing was always like, everyone would be like, drive safe, and I'll be like, don't die, number one rule. Like, just, please don't.
But, like, it's even then, like...
It's not someone's, yeah, but
it's literally nobody can plan. What phrase
you're talking about, but by
it's not just that one. There's other ones yeah, too.
But putting it in some way as a blame on the victim. Well, I yeah. tell people
it's not intentional.
Die. I'm also that's just a hope. It's not. I'm not trying to put the onus on the other person. Other phrases out there definitely make it seem like there's like this victimization thing, like where the victim's at fault.
Yeah, or even sometimes, like, I will catch myself being like, oh, that's why I'm never letting our kids do this, or never letting... Half the time, it's really simple things, like going on a sleepover, or walking to the park, or, you know, things that kids are, you know, they do. And granted, we probably are not going to do sleepovers, but... There's things that, like, it's unavoidable. Your kid's going to have to walk around somewhere by themselves someday. It's not... This is... It's such a gray area. It makes you feel mentally safer. But, again, you have to keep yourself honest. You have to keep yourself...
Yeah.
Like, addressing the fact that you feel safer because this is your comfort blanket, not because... It's the actually, other people were less prepared.
Yeah. I one of the things with preparedness is always one of those. It's I see it a lot around like prepper people in our area where they'll go and buy 3 months worth of wheat, but they don't own a mill. So what's that wheat going to do? They don't know what to do with the wheat, but they bought 3 months of it. That kind of a thing. Or people that are very, very big on concealed carry, but they don't own a first aid kit.
Yep.
And in any situation that's dangerous, you'll almost always be better served knowing how to use a first aid kit properly.
Yeah.
Than trying to poke holes from a distance in somebody else. Like, that plain and simple, you will save more lives that way.
Especially because it's very rare that an emergency involves somebody trying to cause harm. It's usually going to be something happened.
You know,
just life happens.
So having the proper tools in a situation. So while it's real easy to get that comfort blanket feel, you got to be honest with yourself on like, there is no preparedness for someone doing something bad to you. There's only kind of being aware that those situations happen. Yeah.
And there is, I mean, there are ways to navigate the world that are probably going to keep you from being in a lot of the situations that we hear about in these podcasts. But ultimately, I just don't want anybody listening who has experienced being a victim of in any way to think that
they could have prevented it.
You couldn't. That's not how it works. That's not, it's not on you. It was them. It was purely and 100% them.
There is no, while there's situations where people have been able to help themselves out of being victimized, there is no blame on a victim when someone's trying to victimize you, because ultimately it will always stop if the victimizer stops.
Yep.
It's on them. You know, like, as much as people want to be like, carry your keys in your knuckles so you can slash at someone. I mean,
yeah,
it's well, not I mean, that much of a,
we went to Denver and I bought a taser and like 2 secret forms of pepper spray because I just in case, you know,
it's very easy to start coming into situations when you feel prepared because you've listened to true crime as seeing boogeymen behind every corner and then feeling like, oh, you're so much more prepared because you've heard those things. And realistically, anyone in any situation, if someone wants to do harm to you, they really can. And it's not your fault in any way. And it's never the victim's fault. But I think that leads into number 6, the preparedness thing, which is because there might be an evolutionary advantage, which is in the past, people hearing about terrible things happening does actually help you like avoid certain situations.
Yeah, you're aware that it is a thing that happens.
Yeah. And in the past, it's always been one of those things of like anyone that did survive a situation, their progeny got out there. So nowadays it's much easier because we are not in a world where you can get eaten by a wolf at any moment. Not that wolves actually anyone in the North America, but we're to a time now where evolutionarily it's not really much of a thing, but it's kind of built into our DNA because in the past it did.
Maybe that's why so much of it, like so many of us that have anxiety seek out true crime, because it's literally the same as like, you know, our like Mesopotamian ancestors seeking out like, oh, why didn't they come back from this hunting trip? You know,
if you have anxiety, it at least gives you like a reason to like, well, no wonder I feel anxious. There's like
bad legit guys out there.
Bad things happening. Like it's okay to be anxious. Number 7, we're glad we're not the victim. And I think this one,
that's a bummer is, one. It's true.
I think it's especially for people that have been victimized or know someone that's been victimized in one way or another. It is one of those things where you become interested because it's one of those situations where you go, it's not happening to me in that way. And that's really, it's a difficult thing to like, it's totally understandable. I think anyone that's been in a situation that was bad, hearing about someone that was in something worse does give you like
a perspective
almost. Thing that helps, even though it's terrible.
Yeah.
And I think that for people like I have not been victimized in any way. And for me, hearing about people being harmed does not give me that feeling of being, I'm glad I'm not the victim. Almost always it gives me the, like, it gives me a queasy feeling more it than
gives me that too.
But I get why someone might get.
I think the phrasing is weird for me because it's not that I listen and I'm like, oh, I'm glad I'm not the victim or that that didn't happen to me or whatever. I listen and I genuinely am like just gutted that somebody went through that.
Yeah.
But then there's also the like being, well, I kind of what you were describing, which is the perspective and understand, like trying to understand the resiliency. And like, I think it's a little more complex than we're glad we're not the victim. I think that's a little reductive.
I think that I get that. I do think that there's definitely people that are out there where like it does help them like remember that they're not the victim in that situation.
Yeah.
And that's helpful.
Yeah.
Mentally, like it takes a load off. As bad as that still is, it's not them that time.
Yeah.
Number 8 is because we're glad we're not the perpetrator, which I think for a lot of guys could be a huge part of it. When you have, especially people there, I mean, I can only talk from my experience, and I actually do get that a lot of times in a story of being like, I know that I'm not a person that would do that.
That's honestly, and that
helps me a lot.
Half the reason why I tell you stories about like shitty guys I've encountered, because I know that you will get a little bit of that, like, whoa, like, some guys really are that shitty. I'm not that shitty.
And I think it also puts into perspective for people sometimes of like when you've had those angry feelings of being like, I could just kill a person, going, no, I can't. And I'm glad that I can't. And like being able to reframe our surroundings a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think both of those things are ones that are hard to really conceptualize when like it's something that's like one of those guilty feelings you feel of either like glad it wasn't me, glad I didn't ever do that kind of a thing, because you're talking about a horrible situation that happened to someone, but it's a legitimate thing. I think that helps people somewhat in the consumption of true crime content of like being able to frame your reality in a way. And I don't want it to come off as like saying that it's good to use someone else's victimization to help you feel better about your situation.
I think it's good to understand why we get some of that, like why it's people who are so stressed out get less stressed listening to true crime.
Yeah. Number 9, because it gives us an adrenaline rush. And not, I think that one's actually really good because I do think if you're someone that's like has any kind of chemical imbalance, sometimes just having a shot of chemicals into your brain because of your fight or flight response can really make it something that you consume more of. A lot of people I know that like don't like watching like a Fast and the Furious movie, like that doesn't do anything for them. A lot of times they like horror and true crime stuff because it's a very different, like they're not able to like put themselves. It's a different fix. There's a lot of people that can like let go and just allow a story to happen in front of them. And they can easily put their mind in like being part of that story. And other people go, this is ridiculous. I can't suspend my reality. It's never, it's dumb.
And they marry each other.
I wouldn't say that because I'm not into like the Fast and the Furious kind of stuff. Like the simple escapism. Being able to just allow a story to happen in front of me, I tend to ruin movies because I will be like, that's not how a security system works. Because I'm
or in a Harry Potter. Thing. Oh my God. Criticize Harry Potter in front of our 2 children who are obsessed with Harry Potter.
I like to point out
holes.
But I'm, for me, I I do understand why some people can't be in that like escapism mentality mm-hmm. to something in one way. But then when they do watch something horrible, it does hit their brain with a whole bunch of chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps them. Whereas like that person that might be able to like enjoy just like whatever mindless fun that's going on, a horror movie or a true crime story might just make them feel queasy and very uninterested. They don't want it at all. Maybe because they put their brain into that space too easily and it's
yeah
not fun for them. For other people, it's like, oh my gosh, I finally got a little bit of, you know, brain juice going. Like it actually stimulates you when otherwise doesn't.
I have to be honest.
Yeah.
I only get like enjoyment from listening to true crime, sometimes watching a documentary, but it's very specific documentaries because it is really hard to find true crime podcasts that don't upset me. Like I get like annoyed or frustrated at the host's like handling of things, but it's even harder for like documentaries and stuff like that. And if I can't be like watching, if I can't be working, you know, doing something with my hands, drawing, whatever, if I have to look at it and listen to it, it's too much. I can't do it. It's not fun anymore. Not fun. That's the wrong word. But like, it's just not something that like, it's too much. If I listen to it, I'm very engaged. I'm there. I'm listening. I'm in the story. And it's something that like handled well. I really enjoy taking apart a case and trying to understand why and what and how. Not so fun when it's the only focus. I also can't do horror movies.
So you're just not an adrenaline person at all. You're very...
No, I like adrenaline. I ride horses.
I think you're... I think you like dopamine. I don't think it's adrenaline that's in your brain. But I think there's definitely people out there that like that fight or flight kicks in, shoots them full of adrenaline.
Yeah.
And gets the heart pounding. And that easily becomes addictive. Unfortunately, I think that they're the ones that like the more sensationalized stuff.
Yeah.
And does fuel some of the bad sides of true crime content. Just because a very analytical, you know, or expose style where it's simply talking about the details, not going anything too, you know, into too much detail, but rather just talking about stuff mm-hmm. is not going to give them the adrenaline. And so they're not seeking out that content. I think that's what Netflix documentaries are geared towards, the people that want a little shock value to get their heart pumping.
There have been a few good ones.
We always say Netflix, but documentaries are on everything.
Yeah. Well, Netflix specifically has been like doing a ton of true crime stuff because they know that that gets a lot of viewership. But also there have been some good ones where I'm like, okay, I actually feel like they genuinely thought about how this affected people. Like there was the one, I'm trying to remember what it's called, but it's about forensic science and how a lot of times it's not really science. It's just somebody
That one
wrote a book.
I remember us watching about that where it talked a lot about the experts in cases.
It's called Exhibit A. That's what it is.
Yeah. That one's a really good one when you want to see. I recommend anyone watches it because it helps a ton in understanding that when you have an expert witness, especially when you're talking about expert witnesses for autopsies and more fringy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Like crime scene analysis.
You start to find out more and more that like a lot of those experts are really just hired guns. They're specifically told by either the prosecutor or the defense the way they want it framed, and they'll come in with their expert testimony mm-hmm. and say it one way or the other.
That's exactly what happened with Michael Fuckhead.
I don't think that was his name.
No, it's not his proper given name.
Peterson.
Yep. There's the one. I really don't like him.
Yeah.
But that's exactly what happened in his case.
Yeah.
And it almost made it so that he didn't have to really see justice.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. There's a lot of autopsy experts when they like, especially when you have the defense coming in and wanting to do an independent autopsy and a really big media covered case.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few of them out there that where they get shockingly different results than what the original autopsy was. And granted, some of the times it is the other way around. You might have I think it was the Baltimore medical examiner ended up having a whole bunch of cases where, like, on independent review, very different causes of deaths were found.
Yes.
And was essentially just whatever making the police told him the cause of death was. That's mm-hmm. what he's putting on it without doing a full examination.
That's so tragic.
And so you do have some reversals of that, but oftentimes if it's in a big celebrity case and suddenly you have autopsy coming out that's very different than what it is. Look at the names, because you'd be surprised at how many of these are like hired guns.
Yeah, well, yeah, they pay to have a witness or an expert testimony given.
Yeah. Number 10, because we want to solve the mystery.
And that's another major one for me. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for most people, you want that resolution. You really want to like have it make sense at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And finding that, it's one of the reasons why you get a lot of different theories on cases that might be a little more difficult.
Yeah.
You get a lot of really out there theories on some of those cases. And I think it's just because people need to have something that makes sense in their brain. And sometimes the simple explanation does not.
It just doesn't cut it for them.
Cut it for them, you know?
That's a huge part of why I also try to cover cases like Nikki mm-hmm. Bukolace and like Trisha Beristein.
Yeah.
Because I want to figure it out. I want to understand.
Yeah. I think that's totally reasonable. That one's actually, I think it's surprising to me that that's not number one on the list.
Yeah.
Because to me, that's probably most everyone's, you want the explanation. You want to solve it. And that's also why
I want to solve it and I want justice.
when you have ones that are super covered in the media and the media was trying to kick up a frenzy, so they bring in a bunch of people to have all the competing theories they can,
mm-hmm.
some of them being very out there. And it just makes it so people want, at that point, they crave solving the mystery in a way that's more satisfying because they've heard all these other theories.
Yeah. So
in the media coverage circus, I think that definitely.
Well, that's when we get things like the owl theory. Okay. That's how we get the owl theory. That's
when you're a lonely defense lawyer living next door to a guy that probably killed his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. Number 11, because we like to be scared in a controlled way. And I think this one
is exactly
the same reason why people like, especially like really, really gory horror movies,
mm-hmm.
knowing that you're safe, but also being curious about, like, you want to be able to let your, I think that some people's brains are wired to want to be in that headspace on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's that, you know, you can, like the adrenaline is there. It gets you into this scared thing. It's like going through a haunted house. Right.
It's actually like healthy for your own processing capabilities too, because I literally, so when I was going to talk therapy a couple years ago and really working on trying to process some just old stuff, and my therapist literally was like, okay, I'm going to send you home and you're going to watch this horror movie. And I was like, what? No, I'm not. And he's like, no. It's really good because it actually goes through like all the emotions, because it's actually a pretty complex story. And
he's
like, it goes through all the emotions. There's a storyline where you feel love and happy and you're scared and you're like, it's everything all in one movie. And then at the end, it like is all wrapped up and it's done. And then you've worked through all these feelings. And I thought, it was very funny, and I ignored that for like two visits, and then he's like, no, really, you should watch it. And I watched it, and he was actually right. It really does help, like, regulate, like, and that, I think that's part of why, I liked Law and Order as a kid. I liked being like a little bit freaked out and working through all these emotions of like, oh, now we have to understand why somebody would do this. Why, like how? And then at the end, I'm at home. I get to go to bed and, you know, kiss my parents goodnight.
It's all safe.
And,
and most of the time you get that resolution at the end. Mm-hmm. So it feels like, and there's justice.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's actually I think it kind of culminates like, or rather wraps up mm-hmm. so many of the other things is just that I think people just like having that little bit of unsure ground,
bit of chaos,
but knowing that it's not happening to you. And hopefully at the end of it, you either solve a mystery or have some kind of resolution. And that the final one, number 12, is because storytelling is good. And I think that's the underrated one.
Yeah.
The cases that tend to get a lot of coverage and are most interesting to people are ones where ultimately you have a very good journalist.
Yep.
Underneath it all, that did a very good job covering the case, and or you having a case that has not gotten the coverage and they're bringing light to it. There's someone out there that has provided a thread to pull on, and they've given you the interesting details. Unfortunately, that's also why so many cases are not very popular, is because they weren't
the right person didn't pick it up.
Yet. Yeah.
It is very interesting. There are some cases that I would like to cover that I've researched. I have several that are like pretty well fleshed out, but I can't really do a whole episode on them because there's just not enough, because there's so many articles, but it's just the same information regurgitated in a slightly, you know, reassembled way.
Yeah.
It's not really good new information. It's especially hard if you're looking for information that is focused on victims.
Yeah.
That is and some of that may be that, you know, families don't want to share about their person. I understand that and I respect that. But it is so frustrating and so difficult to find the pieces that are written with respect to the details and the people involved.
Yeah.
Weirdly, a lot of the better articles are through things like Vice.
Yeah. I mean, Vice is reporting in a lot of ways, depending on who's doing the reporting, are actually really, really good in-depth studies on stuff. Like, they're really well thought through front to back.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't expect that. It's the same thing with Teen Vogue. Does really, really good stories when mm-hmm. it's stuff they've gone through. And I think a lot of that is because it is challenging the norm of what they cover. So the editorial process means that they really have to go and cover everything.
The deep dig, yeah.
Because they have to justify the entire thing front to back.
Mm-hmm.
So it does tend to be really well covered. It also is probably because there's multiple people on it, because it's more difficult than a lot of the other coverage they may be doing.
Yeah.
Instead of it being one of those things like a reporter on the crime beat for a mid-sized market might be writing small blurbs about 100 crimes in a mm-hmm. week. Very hard to like put a whole bunch of thought and detail and
tell for
a
story sure. on and it I'm because not they don't have that,
enough time.
But there's just so many that it really is, you know, the main news sources, you know, AP or whatever released a press packet that they got. Yeah. And then that's just what everybody else
they regurgitate took, and then rewrite it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it.
And I think that it's why you see the same stories kind of come up, because they got a lot more coverage and you had better writers covering those things. Not necessarily because I shouldn't say better writers. I should say just writers
given more. People who are paid more, to write more.
to write more. They were given more inches to do it.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the hard things with a lot of cases in excluded groups, is that they don't get covered as well because no one is paid to cover them.
Yep.
It becomes a blurb of officers dispatched, body found.
Yep.
That's it. And that's all they say about it. No one's ever paid to pay more attention than that. And unfortunately, that also means they rarely get investigated very hard because there's not a whole lot of focus. And ends up getting no justice. And that's a hard one because you have no information anywhere on it. So it's hard for us to cover. It's hard for anyone to ever.
I just get so much. But that's also why I try to do. I know that they. So they traditionally are not our cases that get the most listens.
Yeah.
The ones that I do that are unsolved and smaller cases. Understandably, there's not as much meat to them.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times people will be like, man, wait for the next episode. But I do try to like drop one in every here and there because those are the ones that I really feel strongly need to be talked about and yeah. need to be covered, because while a resolution is great, the ones, I mean, there's stories that aren't done yet.
Yeah.
We need, like, they deserve to be done too. They deserve their resolution too. So I try to do my very best in my storytelling. I try to do a lot of research, but those are the cases that really need it. And if you're a good storyteller, start a podcast and please help me talk about them.
Yeah. Or if you really want to tell stories, you can always, you know, write a story about stuff and we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can send it to us.
Or if it's something that like personally means something to you.
Yeah.
Get in touch with us. Maybe you can come and help us tell the story, you know?
Yeah.
I want to make sure that we are telling stories the right way and well.
So yeah, that was the 12 reasons why Mental Floss says that we listen to true crime. And you know what? I think they're pretty right.
They're spot on.
I mean, a lot of them are kind of redundant. Like they're pretty close to each other and stuff. There's nuance there, but I think that they cover pretty much all the bases for people. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think that examining why true crime is a thing and why we're doing stuff is ultimately like interesting.
It
like,
is. Why
just hearing cases is great.
I also think industry.
Yeah.
That is so absurd.
Yeah.
And yet here we are.
Here we are. Anyway.
So, not like we're getting any of that.
No. But I'm okay with
it. Yeah, I'm cool with it.
Cause of the week.
So our cause of the week is the Marshall Project. It is a nonprofit online journalism organization focusing on issues related to criminal justice in the United States. That felt pretty applicable.
Yeah, I think we can both agree that like good journalism, especially journalism that focuses both, just in generally on marginalized and excluded groups as well as social justice reform is pretty important in the true crime space. One that predominantly exploits victimhood and oftentimes has a lot of non-criminal justice reform spokespeople. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people that are really hell-bent on punishing criminals and
which I get that feeling. I feel that feeling. I can't tell you how many times I will hear something horrible that a criminal has done on a podcast while I'm like shoveling poo or something, and I work at a barn, just so you know. Shoveling poo is not a hobby. I mean, I also have horses, so yes it is, but you know what I mean. But I will get so angry and I'm just like, just throw them away. Just throw away the whole person. Just so done. That's also so simplistic and
we've talked so many times in cases of like, had they gotten the support earlier on, people seeing the signs, or like the first time they're arrested, it was actually like not just in a prison, but reformed
mm-hmm.
and had support stuff, how it could have. Either they would have been able to get help sooner because
or been monitored enough not to
offend
in that way.
Yeah. Our criminal justice systems in the US is our largest supplier of mental health care, which is a travesty because they're not good at it and not at all meant to do that. And unfortunately, mental health is criminalized in the US essentially. The first people they called when someone's having any kind of struggles tends to be the police, and anything they have done gets them locked up, which most of the time makes things worse and makes it harder for them to get help or has all their problems written off only as that, and they're not able to, like, it just causes so many issues. And ultimately, what I think everyone should be going for is trying to fix our system so we can focus on stopping things from happening rather than perpetuating a for-profit cycle that profits off
hugely disproportionately imprisons very specific minority groups too. So the Marshall Project, go donate.
Yeah, go donate. Links in our thingy. But
it's also, if you are good at remembering things and just want to type it in yourself, you can go to themarshallproject.org.
I don't have a fun story for you this week because I've been working a lot.
Yeah, listen, guys.
So someday. I don't have anything to cheer you up. One day I will only have one job, and then I might have fun stories for you.
Wouldn't it be cool? The day that we both have one job each.
I dream about those days. Anyway, thank you guys for listening to us. I know this was a very talky episode with no case, but hopefully it was something you enjoyed listening to.
And we want to hear your thoughts on this too.
Hit us up.
Did they miss anything on the list?
How can they hit us up?
Oh, they can hit us up by joining our Facebook group, which is This Is Awful, a true crime podcast group.
Yeah.
They can also find us on Twitter at This Is Awful Pod. That is run by Trevor.
Don't come after me. I'm not good at the tweets. I'm not saying you. Oh. I'm saying to them.
I was like, whoa, calm down. You could also come find me on Instagram at This Is Awful Podcast. I have definitely been not great at Instagram lately, but also it's just been a lot. So you guys have been super, super nice to me and still messaged me anyways. And I just really appreciate you guys. That was really sweet. Y'all are great. If you would like to email us, our email is thisisawfulpodcast@gmail.com. You would also be loved forever if you would like to leave us a review and a rating. You can do so on like the Apple Podcasts things or, you know, wherever you listen.
Stitcher
or
Podcast Addict. I don't think
Stitcher
Addict
lets you review.
They do online on the browser, I think.
And then also, if you would like to become a Patreon to sponsor our donations to all of our causes of the week, or, you know, some of it anyways. And then also, if there's never anything left over. That's what it's for. So you can do so by going to patreon.com/thisisawfulpodcast, right?
Yeah.
Then if you would like to, I'm missing one, buy our stuff. If you want to buy things that I drew on things you can wear or drink out of, then
or carry.
Yeah. Then you can do that at shop.spreadshirt.com/ this-is-awful-podcast. He laughs at me every time. Yep.
That's a great name.
And yes. Is there anything else? Did I forget anything?
No, I think that's it.
I did it.
You did it.
Okay. Well, thank you guys for listening. We love you all very much. Remember who you are and what you stand for.
Don't die.
Bye, guys.